Start the recording. There we go. Okay. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for making the meeting at such a short notice. We have Diana Brooking. Did I get your name right? Diana Brooking?
Correct.
Yeah, University of Washington. And just kind of wanted to have maybe a little input on maybe the decision-making process that you guys did for ebooks, for packages versus the bib records from the library catalog. We just turned in all of our migration forms, and we had a lot of questions from everybody about what should they do about their ebooks. Should they, because we have several shared packages of ebooks that the whole system uses. And so we had libraries who wanted recommendations. Should they use those packages or should they go ahead and take the records from their catalog during the migration? And we really, really didn't have a recommendation for them. So we were kind of hoping for the next round for the last migration that we could have some idea and maybe, like I said, the decision process that maybe that you guys went through first, you know, taking a package versus records, or how good were the records? And is that part of, you know, the decision-making process? And
migrated, is it almost 3 years ago now?
Oh, wow.
So it's been a while. And as I recall, we probably had some access to the community zone, kind of poked around, saw that the records were very poor, and just, you know, because there were a lot of moving pieces in this migration. We were in the first cohort migrating, you know, the first ALMO with a network zone, and so there were a lot of unknowns and issues. And seeing that the community zone records, the bibs, the metadata was so poor, it was kind of easy to just say, fine, we already have all these OCLC records and vendor records in our catalog. Let's just migrate them. And that's what we did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And have you seen anything since then that taking the like OCLC records, or have you decided to use, like, you know, like, example, we have ProQuest Safari Tech books. Have you decided at some point maybe to go to the collection and not use like Safari records, or you know what I mean?
And have we had a chance to revisit this decision? And the answer in short is kind of no. Because we're getting to a point, I hope we have enough bandwidth in the next year to start making these, it looks like we're going to have to look at sets on a set-by-set basis. And there's several different variables at work. One is the quality of the metadata in the community zone versus the quality of whatever other sources of bibs that we have. Secondly is how many problems are we getting from, and I have to say, OCLC WorldShare, the OCLC KB. Usually when we get records direct from a vendor, it's pretty simple model. The OCLC KB is really complex, and there are a number of problems and issues with it, and matching algorithms, and so, you know, how many metadata problems are being generated by OCLC WorldShare? You know, is it worth the problems there versus just turning it on in the community zone? So, and then the other unknown factor is PCI. We're using Primo for the front end. There's something called a Primo Central Index. And it has some ebook metadata in there, but the problem is you can't examine the metadata until you turn the collection on. And we actually have a sandbox, a full live sandbox that we could be doing this in, but that like involves another department in the library. They don't have time. They've been putting me off because, you know, I just want to turn on certain collections in the sandbox, see if I can determine what the metadata looks like. Because the whole model in the ALMA community zone and in most KBs is based on e-journal. And the idea is you have an e-journal And what you're using the KB for is link resolution. That the object, you know, your real metadata is at the article level. That's what people are looking for. Discovery is all about articles. The KB, you just need an ISSN and a title, you're good, whatever. It's just being used for link resolution. People aren't necessarily, you know, searching for entire journals. And so Ex Libris, and I'm sure other people out there, follow this same model for an ebook. It's like many of those collections, you look, they maybe have a title, maybe a 245A, maybe an ISBN, and the URL, and that's it. You know, that's, it's enough, right? You know, the idea that these records in the community zone are just not about link resolution, but they're also about discovery. And I think that hasn't quite percolated all the way through. And the OCLC KB has a matching algorithm where they try to find OCLC bibs, but if they don't have them, it's kind of like, oh, no big deal. Because again, they are expecting you to somehow be using OCLC WorldCat and that, you know, the KB is just for link resolution. So the Primo Central Index, if it has good ebook metadata, that might make up for the lacks in the community zone. But we would want to examine that on a, you know, set-by-set basis, trying to determine. So I think, you know, discovery, metadata for discovery is really one of the driving forces.
Okay, that's, yeah, I didn't really think about that. We have PCI also, and I hadn't thought about comparing the results from the index versus what's in the KB. Yeah,
and it's not clear to me even what's in there because we haven't been able to get in there and turn it on. Some people suspect maybe it's only chapter level metadata in there, and other people think maybe, you know, we're just speculating. We don't really know because we haven't gotten in there and turned things on in order to be able to see that. And I think that's one of the big frustrations for me in the way PCI is set up. It's like, well, you should be able to go in there and look at stuff before you, you know, turn it on.
Yeah, it's definitely a mystery looking in there.
Yeah.
I had to set it up, you know, and I went, well, okay, so it's just, here's a title of a database and it's on or off. Okay, got it.
Yeah, it's a little scary. So at least now we have a sandbox so that, you know, at least we aren't doing this to the public, right? Turning things on and off. And...
Well, hey, what happened?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that's a good point. I didn't think about that, the Primo part of that.
Yeah, that might make a difference. And then, of course, they're always, and again, it's very hard to determine. Sometimes you're just doing detective work, like how up-to-date is this community zone set? In some cases, we see some of these ebook sets apparently haven't been updated in 2 or 3 years or something. And you know, trying to determine the currency, the accuracy of the URLs, when Knobel changed all their URLs, you know, that didn't get percolated down to the community zone. And sometimes OCLC KB has these same issues too, the idea that, and then everyone, the vendor blames the publishers, the publisher blames the vendor, and you're just
yeah,
you know, stale data, so.
Is anyone out there from an ERM or tech services working group have any questions? You're probably more knowledgeable than I am about the ebooks. I don't work with the packages all that often, but any?
I have a question. This is Casey. So I guess I have two questions. One, so when you're dealing with ebook sets, you're saying sometimes you get them from the community zone and sometimes you might get them from the vendor. Is that what I'm understanding?
Well, no, we at the UW haven't used the community zone for ebooks yet.
Not at all. Okay.
Yeah, not at all.
Okay.
And, but we're either using the OCLC KB
okay.
or we're getting directly from vendors, and about half, I don't know, there may be about 9 packages we're getting directly from vendors, and at least half of them have OCLC numbers in those records.
Mm-hmm.
So we're using OCLC numbers as the matching control and dedupe number for our network zone for the consortium.
Oh, okay.
So that's helpful. That's helpful to us to have those OCLC numbers in there.
So when you get these records from the vendor, are you like bulk importing them into the
Correct.
Into the network zone?
Correct.
Yeah. And then you're running, you're matching them on the OCLC number?
Correct. Yeah. If they have OCLC numbers, if they don't, we were just loading them to the institution zone right now.
Okay.
And that's part of a migration problem in that because there's several different libraries in the consortia that may have these same vendor records, and how do we get them all into the network zone and matched with one another? And there's no way to bulk share records with the network zone, you know, if there isn't already a record in the network zone to match to. I mean, there's some ALMA limitations about that's hindered us in this cleanup. We would ideally like to share everything we can in the network zone.
So do you have sets of ebooks that are common to the whole system, to everyone in the consortium?
We do have a few, and it's usually because they're actually purchased by the consortium, right?
Okay, that's our situation.
And those, trying to think, we've approached several different ways of doing this. And one of the newest packages we bought after migration, they decided, they turned on and they asked all the members to turn it on in the community zone. And that's how we're managing it.
Hmm. And has that worked well?
I think so.
Okay.
We've had more negative feedback about the set where they're using OCLC bibs in the network zone because they have to go in, I think, and manually delete things when they get pulled, and they are having problems keeping that up to date.
Mm. Okay.
So, but, you know, and for whatever reason, I'm not sure the community zone collection is that much more up to date, but we don't get as many reports about that.
Okay. And then the other part of my question was about when you migrated. Now I realize you might not remember after 3 years, but people who had ebook collections, did you advise them to migrate them as PDE, or better to turn them on either in the community zone or else in the batch upload them to the network zone? I mean, what was your advice to everyone about that, or what did you do?
At the consortial level, they just basically said, do whatever you want. In the Pacific Northwest, we have a fairly, I don't know quite how to say it. You know, everyone's quite independent minded, and getting everyone to do the same thing isn't always, you know, that we had one large library in the consortium where they do everything in the community zone. They did everything in, I think it was SFX before this, and all their ebooks were in the community zone. And that's just what they did because they did not have enough personnel, the bandwidth, to do anything else. We were on the opposite end of the spectrum where we're just so dedicated to finding the best metadata for discovery we possibly can. You know, we have dedicated to, you know, keeping up these collections with the full OCLC bibs. And we were just horrified at the idea of just turning things on to the community zone, like that wasn't good enough. So, you know, as a whole consortium, everyone migrating, they just figured, you know, they just had to, because everything in essence still comes down to the individual libraries. We don't, except for a couple of these packages that are purchased centrally, we don't yet have a plan for sharing technical service workload for things that are actually purchased at the institution level. So the idea that each institution is just going to have to do what they need to do, you know, based on their own personnel and, you know, demanding that, okay, every institution will do X, Y, and Z when maybe they don't have the hours or the skill level or whatever to do what needs to be done. So, you know, and it's, we're still kind of struggling with that.
Yeah, I think we'd, my sense is that we'd kind of like to avoid that situation from the get-go and perhaps come up with some sort of plan, because we do share a lot of, there's a lot of eBooks that we share, and then of course there are things that people have at the local campus, but I think we'd like to, we're hoping to get something consistent for that worked out up front, at least if we can.
Okay. And do you have any staff that then will be centrally managing whatever on behalf of everyone?
Well, I think that's yet to be determined.
What is not just Jessica?
Yeah. if it's an ebook package, the e-collection, that would be me, but the records sitting in the network zone, I wouldn't be. You don't want me touching those records. Put it that way.
Well, I mean, we do have arrangements already where, for example, one of our campuses, out of the goodness of their hearts, enhances the Safari tech book records basically every month, and then sends the record set out so that other people can load it if they want to. So I think we were kind of looking at perhaps some sort of, you know, shared labor agreement where if it was necessary to do that sort of thing, maybe different campuses could pick different collections or something along those lines. But that's that's all very pie in the sky at this point. That was my question, if other people had questions.
Yeah. Right.
Hi, this is Lisa. Can you hear me?
Yep. Yes.
Okay, thanks. I'm from Sacramento, and I have a question. I'm not sure how I can put this. When we first came up with Alma a few years ago, the community zone was closed to editing or contributing. And it's been, since then, it's been opened up for contributions. And I think that there was a small document that was published by Ex Libris about contributing to the community zone, but it's still kind of vague to me about how that works. And I was wondering if you had any discussions or if you're actually about contributing to the community zone, or if you are currently contributing metadata or bibliographic records for packages to the community zone for use for your consortium. Does that I don't know whether it's legal to load OCLC records into the community zone into a package, if people are doing that, or do you have
I don't have a sense of that, because I don't think so far the consortia has heavily gotten into this at all. Again, because I'm not a community zone user, but my impression is people are kind of tinkering, you know, trying to correct errors here and there when they find them, but there's been nothing massive. And in fact, we just had a question that came across today. Are we allowed to do any kind of bulk updating to community zone records, or is it just you have to open them up manually one by one? And I don't know the answer to that question.
Right.
I mean, I think it's meant to be very free. We were kind of in disbelief where they said, oh yeah, it's okay to load OCLC records. I mean, sure, certainly we find in the community zone now bibs that include OCLC control numbers, you know, whatever that means.
Right.
So I think, yeah, we just aren't heavily into that yet. I mean, our questions are, you know, the labor involved, you know, what fields you're allowed to change and what not, and, you know, what the scope of it is, and just, because any maintenance you do in there presumably, hopefully will be preserved and shared by the community.
Right.
But it also kind of is like, you know, we wish that the vendors and ex libris, in fact, would be doing more of this work rather than us.
Right.
Actually, so there's a certain resistance, too.
Yeah, that's actually, can you hear me?
Yes. Well,
okay. Yeah, that's actually a better solution if we could get, for instance, you know, Alexander Press to, you know, load their records into Ex Libris, into the community zone, which they might be starting to do actually now, so that might be a bad example.
But well, actually, it's an interesting example because I think in PCI, we have Alexander Street Press titles turned in in Primo.
Right.
I think they have direct links there, and I think those are the Alexander Street Press records there rather than in the community zone.
Right.
So it's kind of like figuring out where the metadata actually lives in the Ex Libris universe can be
right, which
tricky.
Brings up the whole issue that you talked about, which I'm very familiar with too, that the metadata that's in the PCI is it's not available to us to view or to change or to update or anything. I mean, we can't even do it, and so that makes it really difficult. And so at Sacramento, we're not using the PCI for ebooks at all. We turned it on originally, I think kind of by mistake, and we had so many duplicate records that our public service staff just went berserk. And so, but we don't use the community zone either for our ebooks. We found the quality to be too low. And then, and also this was a couple of years ago, it didn't seem that they were updating. It wouldn't seem
correct.
Like really up to date. So, we haven't changed our perspective on that, to date. So we're only doing either vendor records for sets, and then WorldCat records for individual titles.
We're still kind of in a similar position, but it is very labor intensive loading all these things to the network zone, getting the OCLCKB feeds to the way it works in ALMA. You have to have a specific import profile for every collection. So you need to get separate files from OCLC for every collection. And how OCLC divides up the collection world and how you divide it up in your own local collections in ALMA can be slightly different.
Oh.
And then the delivery of it, it because OCLCKB is assuming you're just getting one giant record load, and in fact you have some automated feed that just goes every 24 hours. They don't expect you to be collecting individual files and loading them manually. And it's a little complicated to explain, but then there's some consequences that flow from that that create difficulties in the loading. It's there's been quite a bit of traffic on the OCLCKB listserv about it lately, about the different situations of the different libraries and how for some people using the OCLCKB data just isn't. And it's hard in ALMA. So we need to revisit, you know, what is the metadata in PCI really like? What is the metadata in CZ? How many sets can we really remove from the OCLCKB, you know, because labor saving, you know, and it's part of the equation too. And we're at a phase where we really need to revisit this actually.
So you're using the OCLC KB for centrally purchased ebook sets, and then for local ebook sets, each campus is loading for their vendor supplied records into their institutional zone. Is that correct?
Or they might be loading OCLCKB records into the network zone too. Some people, depending, you know, any post-migration sets that we've got that don't have OCLC records, we're also loading into the network zone. We're trying, because, you know, several of us could have the same set of vendor records too. So things that we call ALMA born, in other words, post-migration stuff, we're already trying to start it off in the network zone. And then we have the same vendor control numbers and we try to match on those in the absence of an OCLC number. It's just for the pre-migration things that there's no way in ALMA now to share these different vendor sets sanely. Okay. That we're kind of stuck in our individual institution zones.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Do you have advice on how we might avoid that? I mean, it sounds like that turned out to be a problem for you guys.
You know, I'm not sure because, you know, I'm not really sure, but I think it's some kind of preparation to make sure. What have people done with these vendor sets in their local catalogs? Did they keep the original vendor control numbers? I mean, you have to have a dedupe key that's going to be reliable. And you don't want to rely on an ISBN. That would just be a nightmare. So you have to have some kind of... And what ALMA recognizes for migration, you know, if they're looking for just any old 035 field, then you could get into trouble too. You know, people might have to do a substantial amount of pre-migration cleanup of these vendor records in order to get the control numbers all aligned with one another. Because otherwise you just end up with a bunch of dupes in the network zone. And anyway, so.
Yeah.
But it might be possible. I don't know. It depends on the, you know, what kind of capability people have for cleanup before migration and what the timeline is, you know, and all those kind of things. And what, because Ex Libris had to create the match key of unique OCLC number for us, because originally they were just doing a system number match on the 035 and they weren't looking at the prefixes. And so if the OCLC number happened to match some other, you know, vendor record number, they were doing crazy things. And so we had to get a matching algorithm that just considered OCLC numbers to make that work in the network zone.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure what the options are of trying to mix OCLC and non-OCLC numbers in a network zone for migration. That would be a question maybe for Ex Libris. I don't know. Or people who have migrated later than we did, too. I don't know who else might be out there. Wisconsin is, you know, I think they're ahead of you, but they were behind us, the University of Wisconsin. They might be interesting people to talk to.
Because
they have a network zone.
Yeah. I had a follow-up question, I guess, for you and also for Lisa. I mean, you both talked about the presence of ebook metadata in the PCI, but it's impossible to see? Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, basically. And, you know, until you actually turn it on, activate a collection in PCI, you can't see, like, sample records. You can't, yeah. I mean, I've never looked at PCI. Lisa probably has tried to do it. She could explain, you know, in detail.
The only way that I can see the PCI metadata is through the public interface. And so I could just find sample records. There isn't really a way to like pull, search for the set of records and maybe pull them into MarkEdit or something like that, and actually, you know, do like a formal kind of process of reviewing the records. I've asked our systems people if, because I've been kind of trying to keep my eye, my finger on the pulse of the open discovery movement. And I asked our systems people if there was any way in the back office of Primo that you could, you know, pull a file of of records and view them. And I was told that and I did, and I looked in the also in the documentation, and this was many months ago, and I didn't see that there was any way of doing that in the back office of really doing some kind of like formal process of pulling the records out and reviewing them. The only way that I can review them is just by doing a search in the public interface. As was said, you have to actually activate it before you can even look at the records.
Then you are
dependent on a kind of random sampling, which is also a little uncomfortable, though sometimes meditated tends to be very uniform within a collection, so you kind of have to count on that, but I would feel more comfortable being able to pull the whole thing and do a formal analysis of the data.
Not being able to see it seems quite undesirable, so maybe that's really not a viable option.
Diana, this is Carol from San Jose. I have one question related to that. You said you had a sandbox, right?
Right,
Are you able to turn these things on to look at them in the sandbox, or you guys haven't tried it, or...?
I'm personally not able to do it. I have to ask someone else to do it, and that person said, I'm too busy.
Oh.
So
it's right now the permissions thing that you don't have access to that.
Yeah. I don't have access, and I don't know what the learning curve for it is either, but, So it's been more a question of bandwidth. It would be possible to do it. And then you can at least get a peek at sample some records, see what's going on, but it's less than ideal even at that. But it's technically possible for us to turn it on, at least sample some records in the public view in a sandbox.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know about the sandbox, but I do know that for the PCI, there's a considerable time lag that you have to undergo once you activate a collection, I believe. And can you speak to that? I'm pretty sure there's a timeline, but once you activate, it takes a week or two for it to actually get indexed and start appearing in your public.
I don't know what it is now, but we pretty much have gotten, and I'm sure it's a week at most now. I think they've driven that time frame down. But there are all kinds of things associated with both Alma and Primo that we're always stunned that whatever it is not dynamic. And there's either a 24-hour or 2 or 3 day turnaround or whatever. It's like the data isn't live or whatever. And we've gotten so used to that it could be I turn on the PCI in the sandbox, and I have to wait 3 days before I start looking. I mean, it could totally be true.
Yeah, our PCI, it starts to index on Thursday. So if you make any changes and you want it picked up, the changes have to be made before Thursday. And then I think they appear on Monday, maybe, something like that.
Yeah.
Hi, Diana. This is Luis.
Hey, Luis.
How are you?
Fine.
Good. So I have a question because I think you and Lisa brought up a very interesting point. I know Jessica, Stacy, and all my colleagues here within the CSU know about this debate for me. And I think you mentioned that and Lisa hinted at it. On one side of the equation, you have this terrible bibliographic metadata in the community zone, and we know that. But on the other hand, you have this very burdensome and not so effective approaches of workflows for loading sets of records for ebooks. So you have that tension between efficiencies of the system for managing, let's say, e-resources versus the better record, right? That will improve access to the user. But I was wondering if there is now more people adding more pressure to Ex Libris, if in fact there could be sort of a better way to push them to improve the metadata, as you guys mentioned that, because I think if we don't explore this full-fledged efficiency of managing e-resources through the community zone, I don't think we are going to get, let's say, the bang for the buck, right? So for me, I agree with you and Lisa that, yeah, sometimes maybe some records are completely unacceptable. But then my question for you would be, are there days in which you say, we might as well just be content with whatever the metadata we can get from the community zone and then capitalize on the efficiencies of managing them through a single pipeline? And that would be sort of a philosophical question I have for you. Have you thought about
that? Yes, and part of the issue is we are so dedicated here to the idea of service from the point of view of discovery and the idea, and in some cases, we've already passed the bridge where, you know, if we're getting inadequate kind of matching or not complete coverage out of the OCLCKB, it's just too bad. I mean, we aren't going to go back and try to manually catalog the missing titles, or, you know, we felt we've already made some compromises on that efficiency scale and that we just don't have the bandwidth to make this a perfect world for everyone. But the idea of accepting records where there's just a 245 and an ISBN for an ebook, we just felt we haven't been able to go there. And we're in a position at this point where they have me, you know, at least, you know, maybe half an FTE here at points. And then when I said, okay, I can't do this anymore, money was got for a grad student, an intern from the library school, to come and do this, work on it as well. So they were willing to put money and more hours, you know, to hire someone to keep this up at this point. But like I said, another large institution, Washington State University in our system, they don't have the bandwidth and the labor to do it. And they just said, you know, the community zone, that's as good as it's going to get for us. And so, you know, and it's very hard to measure what your patrons may not be finding because of inadequate metadata, right? I mean, correct. I don't know if they've looked to see that, you know, comparing collections with better metadata get more use than collections with poor metadata. I mean, it's the kind of, I wish we had more time to do those kind of analyses so the decisions could be more data driven. But the point about trying to put pressure on Ex Libris to improve the community zone, there are a number of things where we feel the solution is to put more pressure on Ex Libris to do X, Y, or Z. Mm-hmm. And that's just been really limited in its success.
I see.
They're a bit of a difficult vendor to deal with.
So we'll see. No, but thank you for all your ideas, because they will provide us some guidance for the discussions the ERM task force will have to have and some of the decisions that will be put forth. So thank you. We appreciate your input.
Yeah. It's food for thought anyway.
Sure, absolutely.
And I wonder too if, as well as putting pressure on Ex Libris, which may or may not work, putting pressure on the vendors to, for example, load their record sets into the community zone. I mean, maybe that's another option.
Well, my understanding is the vendors deliver their data to Ex Libris, and then Ex Libris would do the actual loading.
So does Ex Libris refuse to load them, or what's the deal?
I wish I knew what the deal was, because what you get, and sometimes the same thing happens with OCLC, you get a lot of finger pointing where the vendor says, I'm sorry, we're giving all our data to OCLC or Ex Libris. We don't have a clue what the hell they're doing with it. And Ex Libris and OCLC come back and saying, well, the vendor's not giving us the data. And it's like, well, who do you believe? You know, you try to bring the two sides together, but somewhere somebody's dropping the ball and nobody will own up to it.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, that's just lovely.
I know.
I guess I have another question. Maybe you could talk in a general way about, so we've been talking about packages, like handling large packages. On the micro level, like purchasing title by title ebooks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe you could talk a little bit about the sort of workflow for that, or how you manage the records for those.
When it's like what you might call firm orders or individual purchases, and we also handle purchases that get triggered in our DDA projects like this too. We handle them like individual because the volume is low enough, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Where they go, there's an email address where these people in acquisitions get notified, they create these purchase orders, and then they go through to the catalogers and they just get cataloged like anything else.
So you'd be pulling down like an OCLC record for them?
Correct. Yeah. You go on OCLC, you catalog it, you treat it just like a print book or a video or whatever.
Do you hook those up into collections or just
have sometimes, them? Yeah.
Okay.
Because the advantage of collections is you can push out links to a license.
Right.
You can push out reader advisories. You can hook to the a POL line, because sometimes, even though they're individual purchases that are being triggered, they're going into one purchase order somehow.
Mm.
So yeah, they're are a lot of advantages to having the things in collection, and it makes certain kinds of maintenance possible in Alma.
Right.
Certain kinds of updating and stuff that will work easier if things are in a collection.
Yeah, that was my impression.
Yeah.
You mentioned DDA briefly. I've been reading some of the documentation about the DDA functions in Alma. Do you use them much, or do you just, what do you, how do you do
we,
that?
We use their, what is it called, PDA tool, I think maybe they call it, uh-huh. in Alma, and we do use it for our PDAs, and we have 3 or 4 running at the moment. And we do it because it's called the PDA tool, and you're supposed to put PDA projects in there. But we do not understand what functionality we are getting through this. And in some ways, it's less functional than having it in a collection.
Hmm.
And if you try, and Ex Libris's advice is to use the PDA tool, but also put the portfolios in a collection. But someone on the Alma list reported they tested that and it doesn't work. So just FYI.
So when you get a title purchase that way and you're using the PDA tool, you're saying titles purchased that way don't get put into a collection automatically?
They don't. And, but, you know, it's because, I mean, I don't know how much of this is because we have a manual workflow for our purchases anyway. And so when they're cataloged as part of that process, the cataloger unhooks the title from the PDA tool and puts it into a collection, a local Alma collection that we've created for, you know, purchase JSTOR DDA titles or something.
Manually,
yeah, manipulating the portfolios, clicking that's how things get achieved in Alma. It's click, click, click. and they, if it were, take it out of the PDA tool and then link it to one of the Alma collections. Because I have to, let me look at this menu choices again. You know, your actions, you can import repository, manage the profiles, you can terminate a DDA, you can cancel it. I don't think there's functionality in there is to turn things from unpurchased to purchase somehow. But I don't know if you have access already to the Alma documentation. It would be worth plowing through there some more because...
Yeah, we do, and I've been reading it. But I wonder, Lisa at Sacramento, have you used that DDA tool?
Yes, we have. We are not currently participating in a DDA program. Mm. But when we did the same thing. We had to manually... suppress from the DDA and then catalog it as a regular individual purchase for a mortar purchase, just, that way.
Was that, again, related to having to manually process the payments, or was it something else?
I'm not aware that there was any other workflow that was associated with that DDA functionality in Alma that gave you some automated way of doing it. But I wasn't completely involved in the discussions around it. I just can only speak to, the way that we were currently doing it. And it might have something to do with the fact that, a POL has to be created and placed somewhere. And we didn't want the DDA record to be available to the public if we had already purchased it, which leads to a whole nother can of problems. Because one of the things that we had struggled with for all the time that we were on the DDA program was that there was no way to dedupe. So if we had already purchased a title that was in the DDA, they would both appear to the public. So there was always a chance that we would get duplicate purchases where we didn't really want them.
Yeah, well, deduping is always a problem no matter what, it seems like.
On the discovery side, you have the records that appear. I don't know if you have any that come from a collection, but how do the records appear? I don't know what data is in that compared to the bib record versus a collection record. Is it what types of data? I guess I'm trying to think of what would appear.
Are you talking about the PDAs or
any of the ebooks? On the discovery side, what do the records look like for the
user? They'll it depends on where they're coming from, but if it's a regular OCLC record, it'll just look like a regular OCLC record. The way the print OCLC records look is the same way the ebook OCLC records look. It's if all the MARC coding is correct and Primo is behaving itself and you have your NARM rules set up appropriately, you should get a little ebook icon.
Oh, okay.
We have gone to some amount of trouble trying to clean up, actually, bibs where we had both print and electronic on the same bib, trying to make the life of the people doing the NARM rules easier to predict, what does the ebook look like, what is the data associated with it, and not trying to hide our ebooks on print records and stuff like that. But Primo has a way of looking to see whether there's an electronic portfolio and there's some backups. But we have made some effort to try to do separate record approach. we'll never be able to clean up all the legacy records or, you know, all the GovDocs and some of the things out there, but.
Okay. Is there anyone have any more questions for Diana, or I say questions for me, but I probably won't be able to answer them.
You know, it did occur to me some of the questions you have about the PDA and some of these things where, you know, I don't have enough experience or no one there does. And if you have access already to the ALMA-L listserv, you might try putting a few questions out there. I don't know how fruitful that always is, but it's worth a try.
I do have another question for Diana, actually. When you were talking about the loading the OCLCKB data for the network zone, this is something that I don't know much about. And you mentioned, I think, something about a listserv. Can you point me in a direction of somewhere where I can learn a little bit more about this process?
Well, the OCLC, you know, they run several listservs, and on their giant page where they list all their listservs, there's one, I think it's called OCLCKBL or something. Or okay. KBL. It's just capital K, capital B, dash L.
Okay.
It's kind of the moniker for it. And just the traffic on that list, it can be interesting. And then, you know, the OCLC documentation, part of it is I don't know that there's any documentation out there that shows you, like, the interface between ALMA and the OCLCKB. And part of it depends on how you've set up your ALMA. And, you know, there are a number of different options on both ends. And so it's
okay.
A number of moving pieces. I don't think there's one place to really look.
Okay, I see here Luis posted something about the collection manager, and that really rings a bell for me because I remember years ago, before we migrated and we were with III, I was trying to retrieve a set of IEEE records from the collection manager, and I got nowhere with it. I was doing it manually.
We try. I think, Diana, you're absolutely right about the OCLC collection manager. And so not only for e-resources, but now OCLC has been changing things so much. And yes, Lisa, you take a look at the documentation. You have to go there. There are some webinars and seminars that they provide because you have to do all the setup. You have to do all your settings, mark records, delivery, and reports. And yes, it can be a little bit tricky. And now, I think all of us will be required to use that for our WorldCat partners collection, a collection partner, something like that, for the YBP PromptCat. So yes, I think the deadline will be May the 1st. So we've been banging our head on the wall here too. But I agree. All knowledge bases are not perfect, right? For ebooks or for sets of records. Like, we know that from Serious Solutions. For ebooks, they are atrocious, right? And so, but OCLC is better. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
What you have to watch out for are the collections, either archival collections, video collections, things with no ISBNs and no ISSNs.
That's right.
They're only really matching on the 245A. It's just, you will get, the results are unbelievably horrible.
Yes.
So just a heads up. I mean, we've had several collections we've just had to turn off and just like, you know, we can't accept delivery of this because it's just a disaster. So yeah. But so in comparison to those, ebooks are actually not too bad if they have
ISBNs. That's right.
It's all relative.
Okay, well, if there are no more questions, thank you, Diana, so much. That was very helpful. Thank you for taking some time out in the afternoon and talk to us on short notice.
Okay. Well, I wish you guys good luck and keep keep talking to other people too, I think, can only be educational.
Definitely. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Jessica, for setting it up.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.